I was born bold.
Powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today.
Melbourne Airport Parking. Zero cost drive-up parking for all essential travel until June 30.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Very good morning, everyone. Welcome. Monday, 25th of May it is. Great to have your company on the McCafe menu. Our good friend, Robbie Heathcote, is going to join us. His star two-year-old Rothfire absolutely brained him on the weekend, made it 5 wins from 6 starts, so he's going to join us. We're going to head over to LA and chat to Ramona Shelburne, the senior writer for ESPN.com, for the latest on a possible NBA restart. And former Fremantle coach Jared Neesham. Now, you want to be listening, hopefully you're with us for the whole morning, but make sure you're here when we speak to Jared Neesham. He's got an unbelievable story to tell us after 8 o'clock concerning probably the biggest TV event of the last 10 years and how he and Neil Danaher were unwittingly involved. And he's good enough to join us. Welcome, Jared. Great to talk to you.
G'day, Gary. How you going? I played nine games for Sydney Swans, mate. I wouldn't put it much of a VFL career like you fellas.
They were great games. They were great games.
It was a great year.
You're still doing your work with the Clontarf Academy, which I think is just sensational. Can you tell us a little bit about that before we get into this amazing story that Tim's alerted us to?
When I finished coaching, you had to go and find something to do. I wasn't really going to move into states, so I went back to teaching and then just stumbled on the fact that if you put something at school the kids like, they might go. So it was about that simple, and I just was teaching with some young Aboriginal fellows then, and so I cornered the idea along with Ross Kelly, the chairman of Fremantle, who'd left at the same time as myself to start a little foundation getting these boys to go to the school, because the school attendance was dreadful. And that was back in 1999, or late 99, we started it. And with myself, and then I employed a young fella, and fast forward 20 years, we've gone from 25 boys this year, and two staff. Well, this year we're about 460 full-time staff somewhere in Australia, and over 9,000 boys, young men being fully mentored through their high school, from as places as far apart as Warrnambool, Cairns, Gove and Esperance, Broome, Geraldton and Kempsey and everywhere you could imagine. So, Lakes Entrance, Bairnsdale. So, that's been quite an amazing journey. In fact, the most amazing journey of all of them, really. So it's been a wonderful thing to do and to stumble onto and to find something that can help kids who otherwise found school really difficult. Made going through school a lot easier and a lot more attractive. So that's the nutshell of that. Clontarf, that's my day job and keeps me very occupied.
And look, another quick one just on that. So when you see the great stories of recent times, Sydney Stack and Marlon Pickett and others that have, particularly as Marlon had some challenges but have been able to work their way back, I mean, how aspirational are those stories and how important are they for our young Indigenous lads?
I think, the amount of young Aboriginal men over the years, in particular the last 20 years, who've come into the AFL and played, have really, they stimulate an opportunity or dream in a young boy's life, and they see them up on the big stage playing and being successful, Cyril Rioli, whoever it is. And like any normal kid, they want to be like them. Well, you can't be an elite sportsman unless you go to school. That's the first step in the way. And yeah, we've got quite a lot of our young fellas who are in the AFL who've come through our program. And obviously in New South Wales and Queensland, we use rugby league as the attractor to get them to go to school. So yeah, so it's so we've got boys who've come through in those other states who are playing NRL now. So, but we don't care about where they play. With the majority of the boys, like the majority of kids at Assumption or Halebury or wherever, just go to school, don't end up a sportsman and get a job. We'll go to university, and that's really where the majority of our boys end up, getting a job.
Talking to Jared Neesham, the former AFL coach of the Dockers. Now, Jared, the reason why we actually got you on this morning is that I was with Neil Danaher on Friday, for an MND thing that we were doing, and we started talking about the doco, the Michael Jordan doco, The Last Dance. And he told me that the day that Steve Kerr and Michael Jordan got into a stoush at training, you and he were there in the stands recording it and watching it unfold. Is that correct?
I actually can't answer that, Tim. I'd like to answer it, but there was an incident that happened. We were in this tiny little, you know, like a little opera setting up way above the training basketball court. So there's a room for about three. There was Rowdy and myself sitting up there watching it and filming, yeah. And I don't know where that ever went. But there was an incident, and then Michael Jordan came over and looked at us two and said, "You two Aussies," and we looked at him and he said, "You didn't see anything." So I'm bound by the fact that 22 years ago, said to me, "We didn't see anything," and I went, "Yeah, no problem."
So if you had seen something, what would you have seen?
Well, maybe someone getting, you know, belted, but if I had seen it, that's what I would have seen, but I was looking the other way. I think whatever happened, I don't know where Rowdy was looking. But yeah, it was pretty... As it's turned out, it was pretty extraordinary that, you know, we were given the opportunity to go and spend 4 or 5 days there, thanks to Luke Longley. First of all, thanks to Ross Kelly, our chairman of Fremantle, and David Hatt, our CEO, to give Neil and I the chance. The funny or sad part was the third coach, when he had three coaches those days, was Mark Riley, who you know really well. Yeah. And Bomber didn't get the gig, so... You could have been talking to him instead of me today. But, we went and we spent 4 days and we got fabulous access. You know, we were in training all day, every day with them, watching and allowed to, you know, talk to people. It was incredible.
So, Jared, did you watch The Last Dance? Did you catch up with the documentary?
Well, it's funny you ask that. My youngest son, who's a really good water polo player, plays at National League, Clancy, he said, "Oh, Dad, you got to watch this Last Dance." And so I told him, "Mate," I said, I've been in that space and I found the guys pretty arrogant and they weren't sort of my cup of tea. He said, no, you got to watch it." I said, "Mate, I'm not going to watch it." Anyway, the bottom line was he harassed me enough. So I eventually watched it and it gave me a proper understanding of where I was at. Where Neil and I were at, you know, we were watching people who were really going aggressively at training, you know, really demanding a high standard. And because we were only sitting in there for a few hours of each day, for a few days, and you got to speak to Larry Krause and spent time with him and spent time with quite a bit of time with Phil Jackson, I didn't really get an understanding of the whole picture. And I don't think anyone has until this series has come out, and it showed... Really an amazing story to see, you know, him being so determined to win and then getting belted up by Detroit and then deciding to do weights and to become big and aggressive and then for the team to go and get Rodman so they could really compete aggressively and still maintain his great talent even though he was a marked man. I think it's one of the truly amazing stories, and it happened to have been there for a few days. It was, you know, sort of made it good fun now.
Well, when you saw Steve Kerr, because I think it was in probably episode 7 or 8.
It was Steve Kerr. I didn't see it get hit.
It was. Yes, exactly. No,
it wasn't. Yeah, saying, yeah, of course it wasn't. But if you had seen Steve Kerr get hit, when you listened to that story, did you sit there and what were your emotions when you saw that when replayed?
I know, we've seen plenty of guys get hit at training and footy, so it's just sort of not much basketball. You don't expect
Not by the greatest golden athlete on the planet, though.
Well, you're going to get hit by someone, you might as well get hit by him. I mean, you know, there's something to tell your grandkids, you know. So it was actually really, they were intensive training. Rodman was an extremely intensive trainer, and Jackson was telling us that he really had to concentrate on getting him out of this place. Their training venue was in Deerfield. And he said he would just train himself 12, 15 hours a day if I let him. So he was interesting to observe. And then the way Jackson managed them was fabulous. Like, he was a really lovely, quiet gentleman. You know, I always found it interesting when we used to meet with him that he had a lot of Red Indian paraphernalia in his office and stuff, and sort of we didn't chat about it, but it was obvious that there was some connection there for when you sit in his office to see it all around there. But he was a really, really smart coach. Of course, he don't be as successful as he was, but we learned some really interesting stuff off him because from a point of view of sport, he was, you know, they had really basically moved from a zone to where you had to play man on man in the forward half, and there were time restrictions. So he had to deal with some, like, Luke wasn't as mobile as you'd like, but he was 6'3", so he was pretty handy to have in the team. Mm. So he had to deal with issues of not having a very fast team sometimes on the field, and talking to him about the technicality of it was really interesting. So there was that sort of stuff is what we were looking for when we spoke to Jerry Krause, was, you know, how did you recruit this guy, you know, Jordan? Because it's okay for everyone to say Jordan was a legend. Well, he's a legend now. He's been the most incredible sportsman probably of all time. But, you know, he said, oh, I really like the fact that he was 6'6", but he had a reach of about 7 foot. So he had these really long arms, and he's watching at college, and he had the ability to be able to, well, an extra 6 inches makes a massive difference. So we had lots of interesting talks and times with them. We went to a game, but the game was pretty nondescript because it wasn't a home and away season. I reckon it was a pre-season game, and people were more intent in going and wandering to the bar, etc. So it wasn't the sort of games you saw on the Last Dance series where the intensity of the finals were incredible, and they were great to see. So we sort of got them in a pre-season from memory, and We then went out socially with them, which was interesting in itself because they're high profile. They just had to be able to go somewhere where no one else was, basically. Yeah. And so we went out, Rowdy, myself and Luke and those other fellas went out and just sat around. It was as boring as batshit. So, you know. So I don't want to get too enamoured by, I mean, I think Jordan said it, that, you know, like, you have to give up a hell of a lot to be Michael Jordan, and that's part of the issue with giving up your anonymity. Well, he's given it up to some extreme level, you know. Obviously, he gets paid for it, but there's a cost to it as well.
Yeah.
Jared, we talked about you earlier this morning about the game plan, you know, when you were coaching Fremantle many, many years ago. And if you were to step back into AFL football today, no one would bat an eyelid at the way that you had your team playing, whereas back then it was so revolutionary, the style of football that you were implementing. When you reflect back on those days, what is it that you think about what you were introducing then and how it would stand up today and the way the game's being played?
That's a hard one to answer, Tim. Look, we were endeavouring to take possession in the back line, and I think it's a classic situation that, you know, it's obvious if you can take possession. If you're Steve Silvani, you mark it. I mean, I think nearly the greatest piece of play I've ever seen in football was that young McGovern. When he took that mark in the last dying minutes of the grand final, he'd already worked out that he had to play on even if he marked it. And he'd already worked out who he was kicking it to because the guy had limited space. And he'd nail the next kick, which allowed the whole passage of play to get to the other end. And, you know, if he went up and spoilt it, you know, every chance that, you know, his opponent's going to get the ball over the back. And I think taking possession in the back and moving the ball quickly away from the crowd, that sort of stuff's, you know, pretty standard now, except the trouble is that the transition, the players are so quick at running across the field and moving into a defensive area, that's actually pretty ugly. You know, it's moved past when we were at the Bulls. They had actually moved away from the zones because the game had become ugly, basketball. And really, we've moved into the zones, you know, where everyone goes back in the back half. You might as well go to the bar when that happens because it's just too crowded and you don't see the... Which is sad. I mean, hopefully they'll work out how to get it back into a game that more resembles the the '80s, I think, you know, the great film clips that you see where it's a lot of one-on-one contests with fabulous full forwards and, you know, good forwards and good midfielders. But having said that, I mean, the skill level is fabulous that the blokes have got these days. But, you know, when it does get crowded, you know, you leave me out of it. But, I mean, I coached 22 years ago and I haven't coached since. The sport's moved a long way somewhere, and I wouldn't know where that is. You know, Clarks and all these guys are wonderful coaches, and what they did do is they got out and about and started, you know, trying to learn what was happening in other sports in around the globe. And I think the one thing I was lucky, people think it was water polo, is just that you had international. I was lucky to play water polo, which had a lot of international information, you know, counterattack and zones and pressing and all sorts of stuff. And obviously you could use them in footy, even though it sounds crazy, but you can, because water polo is only 6-on-6 and normally footy is only 6-on-6. You don't have more people around the pill than that. Yeah. So it was numerical. It wasn't anything that outside of that. So anyway, it was good fun, and we played pretty exciting football. When it worked, it was good, and when it didn't, it cost me my job, so it didn't work more than not. Having said that, I'm glad I did it. I'm really rapt. I got to coach Fremantle and be the first coach, but I'm, you know, like I couldn't imagine life without doing what I've been doing for the last 20 years. It's been an incredible transition out of AFL into something that's really, really exciting every day and really purposeful.
Well, your legacy is going to be profound in that area, no question about that. But there's a legacy in footy as well, and there's a legacy in what you didn't see in that day in Chicago at training as well. So we appreciate you for jumping on and not confirming that, but that is an incredible story, and we love that.
That's no problems. The big man might want to belt me, and I'm not keen on that.
He won't find you. Don't worry. We won't talk about it much.
Coughing up. No. Okay.
Good on you. Thanks, great Jared. To talk to you. Jared Neesham, a great character in footy. What a great story. We'll be back and have a chat with it after the news headlines.
Roth Fire by length and a half. Wild Ruler can't get there. Isotope tries also, but Roth Fire's in front. Wild Ruler and also Isotope, they won't get to Roth Fire. And Roth Fire is too hot on the champagne. Roth Fire wins. Seconds a photo between Wild Ruler and Isotope.
Our good friend Rob Heathcote might have alerted us to the fact that he had something pretty special a while back and played out on the weekend. Fantastic win, Roth Fire. Now won 5 of 6. Earnings just shy of $500,000, which would put a smile on his face. He joins us this morning. Rob, congratulations.
Hey, thanks, Gary and Tim. Good to be back.
Nice to talk to you. It was a fantastic win. First up over 1,200 metres and a pretty good field.
Yeah, and look, I've won some nice races over my years, Gary, and I was bloody nervous on Saturday, to be honest, going into the race, even though there were, you know, no patrons at the races, and it's a bit of an eerie feeling, but I think going into the race with only the one jump out because of the revised winter carnival, the timing was thrown out of whack. I thought he might have been a bit vulnerable on Saturday, particularly against a couple of really nice horses. And I know Tony Golan's got a huge opinion of Isotope, but anything that Peter Snowden sends up, you've got to certainly respect. And my lad got the job done, so he's a bit special.
Bit special, all right. Now goes to the Group 1, JJ Atkins, in a fortnight. Do you think he'll handle the rise to the 1,400 metres, Rob?
I think so, Tim. You can't guarantee it, but it's pretty much the same for all of them. Jimmy Byrne, he knows the horse well. He rides a fair bit of track work. He felt he was just a little bit keen on Saturday, wanted to race on the bridle a bit harder than what we wanted, but when he got a soft sectional, he still ran through the line. He's confident he'll get the 1,400. And as Jimmy rightly said, the others have got to beat our lad, not the other way around at this stage.
Hey, Robbie, we like to have a laugh when you come on, and it's always great, but you were pretty outspoken about the state of Queensland racing over the weekend, you and a couple of the other trainers. Can you fill our listeners in about your frustrations?
Oh, it's pretty simple, Gary. I hate cheats, full stop. And I'm not confident here in Queensland that we're playing on a level playing field. And, you know, a group of trainers, well, not just a group of trainers, everybody's talking about it up here, trainers, owners, administrators even. You know, I even have off the record stewards talking to me about how frustrated they are. I mean, without going into a long dialogue about it, our system is different than yours. We have an independent body which is run as an offshoot of government control called QRIC, Queensland Racing Integrity Scheme, primarily which the investigative unit are run by the police. Now, the police do not have the experience that racing stewards do. And I'm not just talking thoroughbreds. I'm talking because we have three codes joined together up here, greyhound racing and harness racing. Well, the body was formed back in 2016 when we had that live vaping scandal, you may recall, with the greyhounds.
Yeah.
You know, horrendous scenes seen on that ABC expose. And so what the government of the day did, they tore apart the model that had been successfully used, the same as you have in Victoria and New South Wales, and they put in this commission, this integrity commission. Well, in our view, it's failing because up here, I mean, catching cheats is not easy. You've only got to ask the people that were trying to catch Lance Armstrong for 7 years. I mean, he won 7 Tour de France's, and he said he wasn't cheating and they couldn't catch him. Well, he subsequently admitted that he was. And it's the same with Ben Johnson in the Olympics, and you've gone through a couple of scandals down there with, you know, the Aquanita Robert Smurden situation, that they only caught him by getting hold of someone's mobile phone. They've been going on for 7 or 8 years. The same with the, you know, the Darren Weir, high-profile trainers, where it's been found subsequently that there's been ongoing cheating. Well, we believe the same's happening in Queensland. Now, admittedly, the commissioner, Ross Barnett, you know, came out with a series of answers to questions that were put to him by the author of the story, Ben Dorries. And, of course, he's put a wonderful bit of political spin on it. The simple reality is, it's going on. Just because you're not catching cheats doesn't mean people are cheating or not cheating. And we would just like to see, and that's all the messages that we want to put out there, guys, is up the ante, more pre-race testing, and do all you can to increase the vigilance and do the job as best you can. I mean, he's made several comments like, you know, if people don't give us information about cheats, then they shouldn't criticise us. Well, you know, it's up to you to catch them. Yeah. That's all we want. If we want confidence and full confidence restored in the actual model. And it's not just coming from us four trainers. I've got owners right across the state. There's other trainers. There's industry participants. And I've even got former leading stewards talking to me about how dire the situation is. I would just like to see us go back to the old model, put stewards who have vast experience in what's going on, increase the testing and catch the cheats.
Hey, Rob. That is as strong as you can possibly get. And if they don't listen, then we would want to know why. We're at our 7 o'clock news. We'll talk again soon. We'll be keeping an eye on your very, very talented horse, Rothfire. But we appreciate your straightforward comments this morning. And we will follow this up and watch with great interest to see it unfold. Thanks for your time this morning, mate.
Pleasure, guys. All the best to everyone down there.
Rob Heathcote. Thanks, Rob. Now, Tim, this is not an area you and I play too much in, but that is strong, strong stuff. From
strong Queensland's stuff.
Leading trainer. So we'll watch that with great interest.
But the most powerful thing probably that came out of that interview was this. My God, Whispers on fire with his horse racing questions this morning.
You might have heard me laugh. You read that word perfect off the screen. So well done.
Cut it out.
Tom Brady is having an absolute nightmare, and he is going to fling his... Charles Barkley, he was on a par three, Tim. So Charles Barkley must have rung in and said, I'll give you I'll donate $50,000 out of my own pocket if you get it onto the green to the COVID. And he put his shanked it off to the side. It's quite extraordinary. Hey, caller of the year, you can win a brand new Toyota Kaluga GX2 wheel drive. Buy your new Toyota online, search Toyota, order and collect. 7 o'clock news, then we'll get stuck into a little bit of footy.
The SEN Breakfast Quiz. For Imar Insurance, the tradies mate. Call 13-IMAR or visit imar.com.au.
They're the tradies mate. That's Imar.
Ready to go for the iMark quiz. A lot of interaction with our audience today, which is great. And it's an RDO too, apparently. So the traffic is light and wispy, but they reckon tomorrow will give us a better idea.
And this one from Teddy Wheeler. Gary, she's quiet in my vicinity, Wisp. I've just kicked off me Bunbury to Newman 15-hour drive for work and you're getting blown off the road.
Good to have you on board, Teddy. He's joined us from the other mob, so nice to have him on board. I'm watching this in the ad breaks, Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning versus Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. You know what Peyton calls Tiger? T-Dub.
No. T-Dub.
T-Dub. Over to you, T-Dub.
He'd be the only bloke that could get away with that.
And Tom Brady's not having a great start to this little tournament. And JJ Watt, the great NFL player, is sledging him on Twitter. Reckons he's not far away from throwing his club. So that's the sort of stuff that's taking place in this game.
We are playing for a pair of Pillar Work boots this morning, thanks to Boggs Footwear. They are magnificent boots, these ones, Gary. I know you're wearing a pair down there on the peninsula. A twin pack of wine, too, thanks to Mitchelton Wines. Tim's joined us in Brighton. Good morning to you, Tim.
Good morning, fellas.
Great way to start the week to join in the IMAR quiz. Jared Neesham is going to join us after 8 o'clock this morning. Which AFL club did he coach between 95 and 98?
Melbourne?
No, sorry, Tim. No, not in... No, not at all. Steve is in Lower Templestowe. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, fellas.
Who did he coach, Steve? Jared Neesham, between 95 and 98?
The Dockers guys.
That's right. Extraordinary game plan, Gary. I'm going to talk to him about that a little bit later. You know what? If he turned up with that game plan today, no one would even bat an eyelid. I think we've lost Gary. I think he's watching the golf.
No interest
in this whatsoever. Can you just turn the golf off? Can you turn it off?
Keep going. You're going well.
Question two. The NBA is in talks to resume play at Disney's ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex. In which US city are they going to restart, Steve?
No idea, guys.
Okay, it's down in Todd on the road. Good morning, Todd. How are you this morning?
Morning, Wispy.
Have I got you on board or you're like Gary, you're watching the golf this morning? Only got a half eye on what's going on here.
Come on.
The NBA is in talks to resume play at Disney's ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex. That's in Florida. Which city are they going to restart, Todd?
Have a go with Orlando.
Orlando is correct. The NRL returns on Thursday night. Name one of the two teams that will play in the round three clash. One of the two teams.
Parramatta.
Brisbane Broncos would have been the other one. Will you be watching it, Gary, on Thursday night?
Yeah, I might cast my eye over it, Wiz, but not for long because I'll be in bed early, but I'll have a little look.
That's a no from you. question four. Which Fremantle youngster was the round one nomination of the Ned Nab AFL Rising Star Award? Which Fremantle youngster was the round one nomination for the Nab AFL Rising Star Award?
Brayshaw?
No. No. This is a tough question, this one. Sorry, Todd. This. Dave's in Newport. Good morning, Dave.
Morning, boys.
Hey, Dave.
Who was the Nab?
Sam Sturt.
Yes, Sam Sturt. Well done. Good work from you. In which year did the US last host the Summer Olympics? In which year did the US last host the Summer Olympics?
2012.
No, sorry, Dave. Andrew is in Sunshine. What year was it, Andrew?
96.
96, Atlanta. Well done. And you win the quiz this morning. A pair of Pillar Work boots thanks to Boggs Footwear and a twin wine pack thanks to Mitchelton Wines coming your way. Good work from everybody out there playing the quiz this morning.
Absolutely.
Who's winning the golf, Gary?
It's in ad break, Wisp. Hi, guys. Do you think there'll be games fixtured at the same venue, e.g. a 1:10 game as well as a 7:20 to accommodate broadcasts? I don't know about that. The first Saturday game is slated to be at 4:35 in Melbourne at the MCG, Carlton and Melbourne. But then you've got Port Adelaide and Adelaide, the showdown at Adelaide Oval later that day. And then you've got Brisbane Lions and Freo, Gold Coast and West Coast that have got to be slotted in there on a Saturday. So we'll find out the actual times. But I suppose it's possible. There was even talk of double headers, wasn't there, Whispers?
Yeah, there was. But I I'm not hearing that, but that's not to say that that's not going to happen. No. We put the call out there about the traffic too. Thank you for all your feedback. Noticeably different about a month ago, everybody. Pretty light between Geelong and Torquay. Have a great day. So it just seems like it's just a moderate day on the roads, Gary.
It does indeed. It does indeed, but it is an RDO, so we'll find out more tomorrow, I would have thought.